That's Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Aryan Narrations. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and today is the second part of Nennius's History of the Britons. And we'll just start by pointing out that in the last episode we heard about Constantius, the Roman emperor, and Nennius mentioned that he was the father of Constantine the Great. But he didn't actually say anything about Constantine the Great being an emperor. And that's because he was talking about emperors that came across the sea to Britain. And Constantine the Great was a king that was born in Britain. So that's why he wasn't covered in that. I've been asked before why Nennius didn't mention Constantine the Great. And he does mention him. And he mentions him at that point. But he doesn't include him in the list of emperors that came to Britain. Okay, let's begin with part two now. We must now return to the tyrant Maximus. Gratian, with his brother Valentinian, reigned 7 years. Ambrose, Bishop of Milan, was then eminent for his skill in the dogmata of the Catholics. Valentinianus and Theodosius reigned 8 years. At that time, a synod was held at Constantinople, attended by 350 of the fathers, and in which all heresies were condemned. Jerome, the presbyter of Bethlehem, was then universally celebrated. Whilst Gratian exercised supreme dominion over the world, Maximus, in a sedition of the soldiers, was saluted emperor in Britain, and soon after crossed the sea to Gaul. At Paris, by the treachery of Meliboeus, his master of the horse, Gratian was defeated, and fleeing to Lyon, was taken and put to death. Maximus afterwards associated his son Victor in the government. Martin, distinguished for his great virtues, was at this period Bishop of Tours. After a considerable space of time, Maximus was divested of royal power by the consuls Valentinianus and Theodosius, and sentenced to be beheaded at the third milestone from Aquileia. In the same year also, his son Victor was killed in Gaul by Arbogastes, 5,690 years from the creation of the world. Thrice were the Roman deputies put to death by the Britons, and yet these, when harassed by the incursions of the barbarous nations, of the Scots and the Picts, earnestly solicited the aid of the Romans. To give effect to their entreaties, ambassadors were sent, who made their entrance with impressions of deep sorrow, having their heads covered with dust and carrying rich presents to expiate the murder of the deputies. They were favourably received by the consuls and swore submission to the Roman yoke, with whatever severity it might be imposed. The Romans, therefore, came with a powerful army to the assistance of the Britons, and having appointed over them a ruler and settled the government, returned to Rome, and this took place alternately during the space of 348 years. The Britons, however, from the oppression of the empire, again massacred the Roman deputies, and again petitioned for succour. Once more, the Romans undertook the government of the Britons, and assisted them in repelling their neighbours, and after having exhausted the country of its gold, silver, brass, honey, and costly vestments, and having besides received rich gifts, they returned in great triumph to Rome. After this war between the Britons and Romans, the assassination of their rulers and the victory of Maximus, who slew Gratian, and the termination of the Roman power in Britain, they were in alarm 40 years. Vortigern then reigned in Britain. In his time, the natives had cause of dread, not only from the inroads of the Scots and Picts, but also from the Romans, and their apprehensions of Ambrosius. In the meantime, three vessels exiled from Germany arrived in Britain. They were commanded by Horsa and Hengist, brothers and sons of Witgils. Witgils was the son of Witta, Witta of Wecta, Wecta of Woden, Woden of Frithawaldi, Frithawald of Frithawulf, Frithawulf of Finn, Finn of Godwulf, Godwulf of Geat, who, as they say, was the son of a god. Not of the omnipotent God and our Lord Jesus Christ, who before the beginning of the world was with the Father and the Holy Spirit, co-eternal and of the same substance, and who, in compassion to human nature, disdained not to assume the form of a servant, but the offspring of one of their idols, and whom, blinded by some demon, they worshipped according to the custom of the heathen. Vortigern received them as friends, and delivered up to them the island which is in their language called Thanet, and by the Britons, Rum. Gratianus Equantius at that time reigned in Rome. The Saxons were received by Vortigern 447 years after the Passion of Christ, and according to the tradition of our ancestors, from the period of their first arrival in Britain to the first year of the reign of King Edmund, 542 years, and to that in which we now write, which is the fifth of his reign, 547 years. At that time, Saint Germanus, distinguished for his numerous virtues, came to preach in Britain. By his ministry, many were saved, but many likewise died unconverted. Of the various miracles which God enabled him to perform, I shall here mention only a few. I shall first advert to that concerning an iniquitous and tyrannical king named Benchli. The holy man, informed of his wicked conduct, hastened to visit him for the purpose of remonstrating him. When the man of God, with his attendants, arrived at the gate of the city, they were respectfully received by the keeper of it, who came out and saluted them. Him they commissioned to communicate their intention to the king, who returned a harsh answer, declaring with an oath that although they remained there a year, they should not enter the city. While waiting for an answer, the evening came on, and they knew not where to go. At length came one of the king's servants, who, bowing himself before the man of God, announced the words of the tyrant, inviting them, at the same time, to his own house, to which they went and were kindly received. It happened, however, that he had no cattle except one cow and a calf, the latter of which, urged by generous hospitality to his guests, he killed, dressed, and set before them. But holy Saint Germanus ordered his companions not to break a bone of the calf, and the next morning it was found alive, uninjured, and standing by its mother. Early the same day, they again went to the gate of the city to solicit audience of the wicked king, and whilst engaged in fervent prayer, they were waiting for admission. A man, covered with sweat, came out and prostrated himself before them. Then Saint Germanus, addressing him, said, "Dost thou believe in the Holy Trinity?" To which the man, having replied, "I do believe," he baptized and kissed him, saying, "Go in peace, within this hour thou shalt die. The angels of God are waiting for thee in the air. With them thou shalt ascend to that God in whom thou hast believed." He, overjoyed, entered the city, and being met by the prefect, was seized, bound, and conducted before the tyrant, who, having passed sentence upon him, he was immediately put to death. For it was a law of this wicked king that whoever was not at his labour before sun rising should be beheaded in the citadel. In the meantime, Saint Germanus, with his attendants, waited the whole day before the gate, without obtaining admission to the tyrant. The man earlier mentioned, however, remained with them. "Take care," said Saint Germanus to him, "that none of your friends remain this night within these walls." Upon this, he hastily entered the city, brought out his 9 sons, and with them retired to the house where he had exercised such generous hospitality. Here, Saint Germanus ordered them to continue fasting, and when the gates were shut, "Watch," said he, "and whatever shall happen in the citadel, turn not thither your eyes, but pray without ceasing, and invoke the protection of the true God." And behold, early in the night, fire fell from heaven, and burned the city, together with all those who were with the tyrant, so that not one escaped, and that citadel has never been rebuilt, even to this day. The following day, the hospitable man who had been converted by the preaching of Saint Germanus was baptized with his sons and all the inhabitants of that part of the country. And Saint Germanus blessed him, saying, "A king shall not be wanting of thy seed for ever." The name of this person is Catel Drunlu. "From henceforward thou shalt be a king all the days of thy life." Thus was fulfilled the prophecy of the psalmist: "He raiseth up the poor out of the dust, and lifteth up the needy out of the dunghill." And agreeably to the prediction of Saint Germanus, from a servant he became a king, all his sons were kings, and from their offspring the whole country of Powys has been governed to this day. After the Saxons had continued some time in the Isle of Thanet, Vortigern promised to supply them with clothing and provision, on condition they would engage to fight against the enemies of his country. But the barbarians, having greatly increased in number, the Britons became incapable of fulfilling their engagement, and when the Saxons, according to the promise they had received, claimed a supply of provisions and clothing, the Britons replied, "Your number is increased, your assistance is now unnecessary, you may therefore return home, for we can no longer support you." And hereupon they began to devise means of breaking the peace between them. But Hengist, in whom united craft and penetration, perceiving he had to act with an ignorant king and a fluctuating people, incapable of opposing much resistance, replied to Vortigern, "We are indeed few in number, but if you will give us leave, we will send to our country for an additional number of forces with whom we will fight for you and your subjects." Vortigern, assenting to this proposal, messengers were dispatched to Scythia, where, selecting a number of warlike troops, they returned with 16 vessels, bringing with them the beautiful daughter of Hengist. And of course, it mentions Scythia there, but what it actually means is Germany, where the Saxons came from. It was called Scythia. And the Germans were the genuine Scythians, the Germane Scythians, which is where we get the word German from, and Scythian is where we get the word Saxon from. They returned with 16 vessels, bringing with them the beautiful daughter of Hengist. And now the Saxon chief prepared an entertainment, to which he invited the king, his officers, and Ceredic, his interpreter, having previously enjoined his daughter, to serve them so profusely with wine and ale that they might soon become intoxicated. This plan succeeded, and Vortigern, at the instigation of the devil, and enamoured with the beauty of the damsel, demanded her, through the medium of his interpreter, of the father, promising to give for her whatever he should ask. Then Hengist, who had already consulted with the elders who attended him of the Ogul race, demanded for his daughter the province called in English Kentland and in British Kent. This cession was made without the knowledge of the king, Geiranganus, who then reigned in Kent, and who experienced no inconsiderable share of grief from seeing his kingdom thus clandestinely, fraudulently, and imprudently resigned to foreigners. Thus the maid was delivered up to the king, who slept with her, and loved her exceedingly. Hengist, after this, said to Vortigern, I will be to you both a father and an adviser. Despise not my counsels, and you shall have no reason to fear being conquered by any man or any nation whatever, for the people of my country are strong, warlike, and robust. If you approve, I will send for my son and his brother, both valiant men, who at my invitation will fight against the Scots, and you can give them the countries in the north near the wall called Gual. The incautious sovereign, having assented to this, Octa and Abusa arrived with 40 ships. In these they sailed around the country of the Picts, laid waste the Orkneys, and took possession of many regions, even to the Pictish confines. But Hengist continued, by degrees, sending for ships from his own country, so that some islands whence they came were left without inhabitants, and while his people were increasing in power and number, they came to the above-named province of Kent. In the meantime, Vortigern, as if desirous of adding to the evils he had already occasioned, married his own daughter, by whom he had a son. When this was made known to Saint Germanus, he came with all the British clergy to reprove him, and whilst a numerous assembly of the ecclesiastics and laity were in consultation, the weak king ordered his daughter to appear before them, and in the presence of all, to present her son to Saint Germanus, and declare that he was the father of the child. The immodest woman obeyed, and Saint Germanus, taking the child, said, I will be a father to you, my son, nor will I dismiss you till a razor, scissors, and comb are given to me, and it is allowed you to give them to your carnal father. The child obeyed Saint Germanus, and going to his father Vortigern, said to him, Thou art my father, shave and cut the hair of my head. The king blushed, and was silent, and without replying to the child, arose in great anger, and fled from the presence of Saint Germanus, execrated and condemned by the whole synod. Soon after, calling together his 12 wise men to consult what was to be done, they said to him, Retire to the remote boundaries of your kingdom, there build and fortify a city, to defend yourself, for the people you have received are treacherous, they are seeking to subdue you by stratagem, and even, during your life, to seize upon all the countries subject to your power. How much more will they attempt after your death? The king, pleased with this advice, departed with his wise men, and travelled through many parts of his territories, in search of a place convenient for the purpose of building a citadel. Having, to no purpose, travelled far and wide, they came at length to a province called Gwynedd, and having surveyed the mountains of Heremus, they discovered on the summit of one of them a situation adapted to the construction of a citadel. Upon this, the wise men said to the king, Build here a city, for in this place it will ever be secure against the barbarians. Then the king sent for artificers, carpenters, stonemasons, and collected all the materials requisite to building. But the whole of these disappeared in one night, so that nothing remained of what had been provided for the constructing of the citadel. Materials were, therefore, from all parts, procured a second and a third time, and again vanished as before, leaving and rendering every effort ineffectual. Vortigern, inquired of his wise men the cause of this opposition to his undertaking, and of so much useless expense of labour. They replied, "You must find a child born without a father, put him to death, and sprinkle with his blood the ground on which the citadel is to be built, or you will never accomplish your purpose." In consequence of this reply, the king sent messengers throughout Britain in search of a child born without a father. After having inquired in all the provinces, they came to the field of Electi in the district of Glevesing, where a party of boys were playing at ball. And, two of them quarrelling, one said to the other, "O boy without a father, no good will ever happen to you." Upon this, the messengers diligently inquired of the mother and the other boys whether he had had a father, which his mother denied, saying, "In what manner he was conceived, I know not, for I have never had intercourse with any man." And then she solemnly affirmed that he had no mortal father. The boy was, therefore, led away and conducted before Vortigern the king. A meeting took place the next day for the purpose of putting him to death, and then the boy said to the king, "Why have your servants brought me hither?" "That you may be put to death," replied the king, "and that the ground on which my citadel is to stand may be sprinkled with your blood, without which I shall be unable to build it." "Who," said the boy, "instructed you to do this?" "My wise men," answered the king. "Order them hither," returned the boy. This being complied with, he thus questioned them, "By what means was it revealed to you that this citadel could not be built unless the spot were previously sprinkled with my blood? Speak without disguise, and declare who discovered me to you." Then, turning to the king, "I will soon," said he, "unfold to you everything, but I desire to question your wise men, and wish them to disclose to you what is hidden under this pavement." They, acknowledging their ignorance, "There is," said he, "a pool, come and dig." They did so, and found the pool. "Now," continued he, "tell me what is in it." But they were ashamed, and made no reply. "I," said the boy, "can discover it to you. There are two vases in the pool." They examined, and found it so. Continuing his questions, "What is in the vases?" They were silent. "There is a tent in them," said the boy. "Separate them, and you shall find it so." This being done by the king's command, there was found in them a folded tent. The boy, going on with his questions, asked the wise men what was in it, but they, not knowing what to reply, "There are," said he, "two serpents, one white and the other red. Unfold the tent." They obeyed, and two sleeping serpents were discovered. "Consider attentively," said the boy, "what they are doing." The serpents began to struggle with each other, and the white one, raising himself up, threw down the other into the middle of the tent, and sometimes drove him to the edge of it, and this was repeated thrice. At length, the red one, apparently the weaker of the two, recovering his strength, expelled the white one from the tent, and the latter, being pursued through the pool by the red one, disappeared. Then the boy, asking the wise men what was signified by this wonderful omen, and they expressing their ignorance, he said to the king, "I will now unfold to you the meaning of this mystery. The pool is the emblem of this world, and the tent that of your kingdom. The two serpents are two dragons. The red serpent is your dragon, but the white serpent is the dragon of the people, who occupies several provinces and districts of Britain, even almost from sea to sea. At length, however, our people shall rise and drive away the Saxon race from beyond the sea, whence they originally came. But do you depart from this place, where you are not permitted to erect a citadel. I, to whom fate has allotted this mansion, shall remain here, whilst to you it is incumbent to seek other provinces where you may build a fortress. What is your name? Asked the king. I am called Ambrose, returned the boy. And in answer to the king's question, what is your origin? He replied, a Roman consul was my father. Then the king assigned him that city, with all the western provinces of Britain, and departing with his wise men to the Sinistral district, he arrived in the region named Gwynerae, where he built a city, which according to his name was called Car Gwerthyn. At length, Vortimer, the son of Vortigern, valiantly fought against Hengist, Horsa, and his people, drove them to the Isle of Thanet, and thrice enclosed them within it, and beset them on the western side. The Saxons now dispatched deputies to Germany to solicit large reinforcements, and an additional number of ships. Having obtained these, they fought against the kings and princes of Britain, and sometimes extended their boundaries by victory, and sometimes were conquered and driven back. Four times did Vortimer valorously encounter the enemy. The first has been mentioned. The second was upon the River Darent, the third at the ford, in their language called Epsford, though in ours set Thurgabale. There Horsa fell, and Catagern, the son of Vortigern. The fourth battle he fought was near the stone on the shore of the Gallic Sea, where the Saxons, being defeated, fled to their ships. After a short interval, Vortimer died before his decease, anxious for the future prosperity of his country. He charged his friends to inter his body at the entrance of the Saxon port, viz. Upon the rock where the Saxons first landed. For though, said he, they may inhabit other parts of Britain, yet if you follow my commands, they will never remain in this island. They imprudently disobeyed this last injunction, and neglected to bury him where he had appointed. After this, the barbarians became firmly incorporated, and were assisted by foreign pagans, for Vortigern was their friend, on account of the daughter of Hengist, whom he so much loved, that no one durst fight against him. In the meantime, they soothed the imprudent king, and whilst practising every appearance of fondness, were plotting with his enemies. And let him that hears understand that the Saxons were victorious and ruled Britain, not from their superior prowess, but on account of the great sins of the Britons, God so permitting it. For what wise man will resist the wholesome counsel of God? The Almighty is the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, ruling and judging everyone according to his own pleasure.
Oh.